Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back, Richard. Have you ever been told just to man up, or just be a man?
Well, not man up, but be a man. Man up is more current parlance.
That's true.
Okay,
that's
so
true.
You know me, but be a man. Uh-huh. Okay, heard that, especially when I played football, high school football.
Yes,
and be a man was frequently invoked, and I was never quite frankly, I was never quite sure what it meant to be. You know, to say be a man, okay. I kind of had a clue.
You're like, I'm only 11. You get a job or something?
When I was 13 or 14, I had to be a man. And I assumed it meant be tougher or something, because we were playing football after all. And I guess it meant being tougher. But I was never quite sure where that phrase came from or quite what it meant.
Right.
You know, was I supposed to be mean? Mm-hmm. Was I supposed to assault people? Was I supposed to be tougher and not cry, not complain, that sort of thing. So I was never quite sure exactly what it meant.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk a lot about it today, but I think you're right. It's used in a lot of different contexts. Sometimes we use it in sports when we want people to be tough, mm-hmm. or we want players to be aggressive and those kind of things. Yeah. We use it sometimes with kids, or it is used sometimes with kids. Mm-hmm. To when they're emotional,
right.
Be a man. Don't cry. Men don't cry. You know, those kinds of.
Well, and the opposite of the complement to that is, boys don't cry. But in parentheses, it's mm-hmm. girls cry.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, men, and people even say that. Don't be a girl.
You run like a girl.
Right.
You throw like a girl. You play like a girl. You know.
So it's sort of it puts this. Gender competitions,
and that girls are inferior
to
boys, and when it comes to sports,
right?
But what boys are hearing is girls are inferior,
right?
I think when you're 11 or 12 or 15 or 18 and you define yourself as an athlete, then girls are inferior,
right?
Okay. But the problem may be is that it doesn't stop with athletics.
Right.
Maybe it goes beyond that.
Right.
You know, the feeling that girls are inferior.
Yeah. And it was so interesting because when I was growing up, I played a lot of tennis and later soccer when I was in high school and everything. But playing tennis when I was young, we played with the boys, tended to play with the boys, and we had some mixed doubles and things like that. But I remember when I was in high school and there were a lot of guys that were sort of that mentality that mm-hmm. Girls weren't as strong or they weren't as tough or as aggressive as the boys. And we had a girl on our tennis team that destroyed all of them.
All the boys.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. she already had like a Wilson contract and everything. So she
sponsor.
Had, mm-hmm. And so it was, it put them in their place very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of people... It is very much so an old world mentality to believe in old world meaning antique.
I think it's a pre Title IX mentality.
Well, yeah.
When I was in high school, girl sports were cheerleading, mm-hmm. band.
Mm-hmm.
There were no girl sports.
Right. That's true.
There were boy sports, and girls were cheerleaders, or they were attendees. Mm-hmm. They were the fans. Okay.
Right.
And it wasn't until Title IX came out that girls began to play sports that I was watching a girls' softball game the other day. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with their athleticism or mm-hmm. their strength.
Right.
And you mentioned girls' tennis, mm-hmm. Serena Williams.
Yeah.
She can't beat most men tennis players, and she acknowledges that, but she can beat most men who play tennis.
Right.
She can't beat the other professionals because that's an unfair comparison.
Right.
But but women athletes are truly athletes.
Right.
But I think maybe you're a pre-Title IX, but you're right. It's an old world mentality.
Right.
My father's generation was of the mindset that men were in charge.
Right.
I learned early on that they really weren't, because I heard their wives talking.
Yeah.
That's right. They let men think that they were in charge.
But, yeah.
You know, in many homes, the woman was really in charge.
Right.
But men acted as though they didn't. I think in patriarchal societies, mm-hmm. and certainly in most religions, men are superior. Men are in charge.
Right, they're supposed to be. So, mm-hmm. but today we're going to talk about this idea of masculinity. We kind of alluded to it a number of weeks ago, right. when we did a whole week on talking about mm-hmm. men's mental health.
Right.
And we found this article that is from Psych Central,
right.
entitled Psychopathology of Extreme Masculinity, Mass right. Shootings, Assault, and Rape.
Right, and the emphasis here is on extreme masculinity.
Right.
We're not talking about the standard garden right. variety masculinity. We're talking about extreme masculinity of mm-hmm. another type.
Right, okay. Right. And so we're going to talk about some of the things from this article, but also, again, kind of talk about what this means for how we're raising our boys, and maybe even specifically how we're raising our girls, and what we're what's happening to our culture as a result of this idea that we need to be a man, to man up, and what message we're sending when we're talking, when we say those kinds of things.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that what's happened is, as we've often said on this program, that most human characteristics are on a spectrum.
Right.
And so we're talking about the far end of the spectrum, but mm-hmm. how does it start, and how do we, as a culture, mm-hmm. how do we inculcate
right.
this value of masculinity
right.
in our boys, so that and for some it becomes toxic,
right.
for some it's so extreme that it becomes destructive.
Right. Mm-hmm. So let's, as we were kind of getting ready for this podcast, I was really struggling with where to start. You know,
yeah.
Where do we jump into this conversation? Because I think that there's so many jumping points.
Right.
Because right. we know that when it comes to violent crimes, mm-hmm. vast majority are by men.
Men. Right.
When we talk about aggressiveness, when we talk mm-hmm. about physicality,
right.
we're usually talking about men. And there is some, perhaps some biological bases to some of that.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we know that certain hormones, particularly testosterone and, right. and such, creates or fosters or, in, I don't want to say encourages, but it sort of leads
well, it's
to...
Well, associated. Yeah, it's clearly elevated testosterone levels are associated with increased aggression.
Right.
In all mammals.
You know, right. And not just violent aggression, but also aggressiveness in other ways, over-assertiveness,
right.
you know...
Competitiveness.
Right, right. right. Mm-hmm. And so when we think about this be a man, we are talking about there are things that have some biological bases to them.
That's right. Right.
And so it's important that we recognize that, and mm-hmm. we recognize that because of the response that our body has to things like testosterone,
right.
that's why we see things where men are more, men are more physical, but also it does something different to their muscle mass. It does something different to their ability
right.
to build muscles and all of that. So
yeah. You see that difference in preteens,
right.
preteen boys, who are kind of pudgy, you know,
mm-hmm.
but by the time they reach adolescence,
right.
15, 16, 17, that pudginess starts to go away in most of them because the testosterone produces
right.
muscle,
right.
you know, rather than, and they dissolve that fat and they replace it with muscle, assuming they're physically active.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So when it comes to assertiveness, aggressiveness, when it comes to really going after something, there is some biological basis to
right.
it.
Right. I think it's fair to say that because the male of our species produces more testosterone,
mm-hmm.
testosterone is linked with aggression.
Right.
Okay. So men tend to be more aggressive.
Right.
Okay. But fair to say, biologically, men tend to be more aggressive.
Right. Now, we also see men sort of on the more negative end of the spectrum when it comes to things like psychopathology and some
right.
of that, especially when
mm-hmm.
it comes to physical and aggressive psychopathology, like
right.
ADHD,
conduct disorder
and antisocial personality disorder and some of those things. And there's a lot of different ideas about why that happens. There may be some biological reasons for it. And I know that some researchers are looking at the influence of the X chromosome, for example. Men, of course, have one X chromosome, X and Y. Women have two. So if one of your X chromosomes is faulty, you have another X chromosome that may be healthy that's going to help overcome some of the issues with the damaged X chromosome. But men don't have that luxury. So
we have a damaged X chromosome.
If we
it's
have
called
a damaged,
Y.
That's right. So if we have a damage to some aspect of the X chromosome, we're going to be more likely to express that damage.
That's right.
That could lead to psychopathology or physical health issues.
That's right. We don't have any spare genetic parts.
Right.
Women do.
Right.
Right. So there is some biological basis.
Right.
Okay. And we acknowledge that and we understand that.
Right.
Okay.
And then there's cultural reasons.
Right.
There's cultural aspects of it. So as you were saying earlier, you know, we have this entire history, this major history of a patriarchal type of culture that where men are in charge and men, you know, they're the chiefs and the directors and the presidents and the kings and all of that.
The religions of the West. Okay, so politically, it was generally kings.
Right.
There were some notable exceptions.
Right.
Generally, males dominated. But also, the Western religions, Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, are all patriarchal systems.
Right.
Okay, and so, not surprisingly, the political systems very often grew out of the religious systems. Mm-hmm. Religious systems are patriarchal. The political systems tended to be patriarchal.
Right.
I mean, they're, you know, go back to Egypt, and it's the sun god, not the sun goddess, the sun god. And so you have this religious and then political history,
right,
a cultural foundation,
right,
for male dominance.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so across, or for these various reasons, we are left then with this sort of, maybe I would call it sort of a social genetic. Like if our society, if us as, if our social climate has had genetic makeup, it would be the genes of our society lead us to believe that men have to be tough. They have to be, there's a certain bar that you have to meet to be a man.
Right.
And I think it's really important that we talk about, what does that mean when we're raising boys? And what does it mean when we're thinking about all of these things that happen in our society? You know, we've had a few mass shootings over the past couple of months, and we've had all kinds of travesties all over the world happening over the past, throughout this year.
Right.
So what does it mean when we say be a man?
And how do we get from be a man to extreme masculinity,
right?
You know, so that it becomes a destructive force.
Yeah,
you know, what's intended to be a constructive force quickly morphs into a destructive force.
Right. Mm-hmm. So see, that's how my brain was all over the place when I was trying to pull all of this together, thinking about the podcast.
How?
Because I was thinking about all of these different pieces.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, well, you got to think about this and you got to think about
that.
Yeah,
you have religion, you have politics, you have biology, you have... it's multifaceted.
Yeah. So where did you think about... How did you think about starting? Right where we did?
No.
Where did you think? Go ahead.
I think about starting?
Yeah.
What extreme masculinity is, okay? And then...
That's a good place to see.
Because it's... This article very clearly states it's extreme masculinity that is associated with these mass shootings. Mm-hmm. We don't know, and we've said many times on our podcast, you can't predict who the mass shooters are going to
right.
be. Okay, there's no way to predict who's next.
Right.
I mean, who would have predicted the Las Vegas shooter?
Right.
But they kept saying
right.
in the news accounts, of that tragedy, they kept saying, there's no way that anybody could have predicted
right.
that this person would have done that.
Right.
There are some where you say, well, that yes, there was a history of mental right. illness. But in some cases, there's no history of mental illness. There's no religious fervor. There's no reason for this right. to happen. And so what I appreciated about this article is that they posit one possible explanation mm-hmm. for why men become so deadly.
Right.
Okay. And I think that's where what I liked about this is that as we struggle to understand mass shootings, that the one in Las Vegas, I guess because it was so lethal. You know, there mm-hmm. were so many people killed. No, there's no religious reason right. for it. He wasn't a religious zealot. There was no history of mental illness. And you wonder, what would prompt a person just to stand in a window and just start shooting strangers?
Right.
You know? And so as we struggle to understand these things, mm-hmm. I thought, okay, here's maybe this might be a piece to that puzzle.
Right.
And there it becomes very useful socially.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then let's start with extreme masculinity.
Okay.
What is extreme masculinity? It's masculinity to the extreme.
It's that, as we said in our introductory comments, we know that men tend to be more aggressive.
Right.
Okay. And so we're talking about an extreme form of masculinity. And I think where we have all witnessed this is in when young men begin to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And we see how alcohol unleashes aggression.
Right.
Okay. Because the aggression is latent.
Mm-hmm.
It's there.
Right.
And as soon as you add alcohol, which is a disinhibitor, mm-hmm. so it removes the inhibition, a certain percentage of men mm-hmm. become highly aggressive.
Right.
When they're disinhibited.
Right.
Not when they're drunk, but when they're disinhibited. It unleashes the latent aggression.
I think that's a great point because there is something to the idea that who you are when you're buzzing, when you've had
right.
something to drink,
right.
who you are then is who you are underneath.
Right. That's
you know,
right. That's
you know,
right.
perhaps
it's the real you.
Right. Perhaps mm-hmm. you are working very hard. Your ego and super ego are working really hard to maintain it and
yeah.
to keep it under control.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you sort of send them off on a break
right.
through
That's right.
through alcohol a little bit,
give them a rest.
Yeah.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, you know, that underlying id comes out.
Mm-hmm.
That underlying limbic system expresses
right.
itself, and if it's aggression, like for me, it's not aggression. I don't.
No.
If
I,
I've
never.
If I've had anything to drink, I don't drink much at all. But
there are men who start to drink and they become belligerent
very quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
They want to argue, and then mm-hmm. they become abusive with or they get into bar fight. You know, the
right.
famous bar fight thing. So that was one thing that fascinated me about
right.
that I really appreciated about this piece. But there's a second one,
mm-hmm.
and as I thought about this, it feels a little, it's I think a little more delicate because I'm talking about it. It's a little more difficult because the other point that this article makes is that extremely masculine men
mm-hmm.
are aggressive because they want to maintain the social order
mm-hmm.
that keeps them in power.
Yes.
And so part of this is not disinhibited violence. Part of it is instrumental
mm-hmm.
in keeping lower status groups
mm-hmm.
in their place.
Right.
Which means since white men are in power
mm-hmm.
in our country, that they're objective
right.
in being aggressive, this extreme masculinity, is to keep lower status groups. Who would lower status groups be? Women.
Minorities and women.
And minorities.
Mm-hmm.
And keep them in their place.
Yeah.
And if we examine our history
mm-hmm.
and our hearts, we have seen that play out. There's a famous movie going around now, can't remember the last name of it, Mud something, and Mud Ground. And it's the story of two families in the South. One is a black family, and they were World War II veterans. So the veterans come back mm-hmm. after fighting for freedom
right.
in Europe in World War II. They come back to the South, where they once again are second-class citizens. And it, right. it's that story of, mm-hmm. and these men are immediately aware of their status. You know, they can't enter the store in the front door. They have to enter in the back. Mm-hmm. They come back to play professional sports, and they can't go into dining rooms and hotels right. to sleep. And so, and there is a part of our culture that keeps minorities and women in their place.
Right.
And extreme masculinity does that.
Yeah. And I think that the important aspect of it is the extreme masculinity.
Right.
We see, because you can see some of those things that you're talking about on a spectrum. You know, right. there are some people who strongly mm-hmm. believe that, and that's where we're getting more towards the extreme masculinity.
Right.
We have some people who believe that, but they're more passive. They don't really actively do anything about
right.
that. It's sort of an underlying belief system. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you have those who
I think
that is ridiculous.
And I think that's what you have, is you have those who, like, there are people who I think are colorblind. I'm sorry,
mm-hmm.
there are. We don't think that way.
Right.
There are others who might think that way but
right.
don't act on it.
Right.
And then there's that third group who feel privileged, would
right.
that be the right word?
Yeah,
or feel
so.
Permitted
mm-hmm.
to act on their...
And I think that if you ask them... I think they feel obligated.
It's their obligation.
Yeah.
And especially if they feel that they've been wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think therein lies the danger, because it's very easy for them to listen, for them to hear messages from
right.
various sources
right.
that that certain groups are trying to take over, whether
right.
they're women. You know, in some cases it's women, in some cases it's minorities, that some groups are getting more than they are.
Right.
We had a we did a podcast
we talked
some
about
months
that on the
ago,
podcast, yeah.
right, about how men are being marginalized because women are getting advantages that men aren't
right.
receiving
right.
anymore. The white men aren't receiving anymore. I mean, the whole issue of race-based college acceptance,
mm-hmm.
you know, quotas,
right.
And that certain races or genders are given an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And when men who have extreme masculinity, they see that as an upsetting of the social order,
right.
that I'm being... And when you feel wronged,
mm-hmm.
then it activates these systems because
right.
now you're threatened.
Right.
And if you feel threatened... See, you and I don't feel threatened by that.
Right.
I mean, I have never been threatened by quota-based acceptances.
Right.
I understand why they do it. I've never felt threatened. But some people do.
Right.
Some people file lawsuits
mm-hmm.
and other people pick up guns.
Right.
Aggression expresses itself in different ways.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that the notion of... we talked about zero-sum game.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
that there's only so many jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so any job that anybody else takes, anybody that doesn't look like me
right.
takes, you know, is a job that I can't have. And
right.
so they're taking it from me.
And I feel threatened. You know,
right.
my livelihood is threatened.
Right.
My family is threatened. This is a personal threat to me.
And I think that, you know, again, when we think about gender more specifically as opposed to more... Mm-hmm. Ethnicity and heritage and things like that. When we think about gender more specifically, what we see as a recurring theme, and that's mentioned
right.
here in the article as well, is that the notion of might makes right, and that
that's
the
right.
idea that, you know, the person, what is it? He who has the biggest club, or he who has the biggest stick,
right?
Will be the leader.
Right.
And
right.
and it's, you know, this idea that it doesn't matter how smart you are.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter, and we see this with bullies and things like that.
Right.
It doesn't matter how smart you are. It doesn't matter, you know, how nice you are. None of that matters.
Mm-hmm.
If I can beat you up.
Right. That's right.
Then Mike. Then that levels the playing field in the very least.
Yeah. The bumper sticker.
Yeah.
You know, my son can beat up your honor student.
Right,
you
right,
know,
right.
Kind of mentality. But you're right. I think the zero-sum game
mm-hmm.
is a very good context in
right.
which to put this, because they see everything as being limited.
Yeah.
That jobs are limited.
Right.
Money is limited. And if a job is going to a woman, then it's being taken from one of us.
Right.
If a job goes to a minority, If a place in a law school goes to a minority, then it's being taken away from me personally. And what that does, according to this article, what that does is it creates hypervigilance in extreme masculine in extreme masculinity. And once you get the feeling that you're being disadvantaged and that things are changing and you don't want them to change, you become hypervigilant. When you become hypervigilant, you become more aggressive because it's the fight or it's that you're in danger and it activates that fight or flight response and you get ready for a fight. Okay. So and it can happen either by disinhibition or it can happen by you're being threatened.
So it sort of triggers and hijacks that autonomic nervous system. And so then you are on constant alert for threats. And you know, you have people arguing about someone taking a job that they wouldn't, that person wouldn't want to begin with. You know, so it's a fascinating phenomenon. Because when we get into this idea of extreme masculinity, where we hold some of these beliefs and we just like, we refuse to let it go. And even in the face of reason and, and rationality, none of that matters because you know, again, that idea of might makes right. So I'm going to fight for this because that's what's right. That's the right thing to do.
And in fact, there's a nice quote here by James Gilligan who says, whether it's homicidal or suicidal violence, people resort to these more aggressive behaviors when they're shamed or humiliated. And then they have something to prove. Okay, you're there's a phrase out today that I absolutely abhor. You're disrespecting me. Oh my gosh. Crimes of violence are, but you're just, so I have to, kill you. I have to beat you up. I have to shoot you. I have to kill you because, well, he disrespected me. What is that about?
And
that's what he's talking about here.
And that's the whole, that's part of the crux of the issue associated with this extreme masculinity. Because if you're not, you know, as I was about to say it, I now want to ask you, because we didn't talk about this before. What is the association between extreme masculinity and self-esteem? I wonder if there's any connection there. Because if somebody disrespects you, well, the way that I interpret that is you don't, your ego strength is not as strong as it should be. If there's something that I can say that would insult you that bad, then there's something wrong with your ego strength, or there's something... you're putting way too much value in what I have to say.
That's exactly what you're doing.
And so if because of something I said, it insults you and hurts you so bad that you feel that I disrespected you, that you want to fight or you want to get physical. I wonder what that relationship is.
Because you don't have enough ego strength.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine anybody offending me to that extent. Who cares what...
We wrote that in the column for this week. That, you know... If you have somebody in your family that has bothered you so much that you won't talk to them for a year, why is there so much value in that person's statement?
Every time I hear, and we hear about families who have broken relationships, they don't speak to each other, sometimes for years. And I think, I try to imagine, what would somebody in my family have to say to me that would be so... say to me, not do to me, but say to me, that would be so offensive that I would stop speaking to them for some period of time, a year or 2 years or 10 years. Now here there's a transition. And I, once again, it's one of those things that I wished I would have thought of first, because I would have liked to have written about this. And it because we've talked about it many times, we have often said, you've heard us say many times, that that most people, the overwhelming majority of people with mental illness do not commit violent crimes. But there is a segment of the population that receives a diagnosis, a mental health diagnosis, that are probably, what would you say, more likely? Would be more prone?
The nature of the expression of that mental illness for those people increases the probability that they would be violent or aggressive.
Right. So if you take
that was a statistical way of saying it.
Right. Right. So you take a person with extreme masculinity, and if they also have one of these personality disorders, then you're far more likely to see externalized aggression.
Right.
And these are the first we know is antisocial personality disorder, and the other is narcissistic personality disorder. Antisocial personality disorder, I always think of as the adult expression of juvenile delinquency. You know, the juvenile delinquent who's stealing and shoplifting, and he turns 18 and he turns to more violent crime. And so conduct disorder becomes antisocial personality disorder.
Okay. And there's one thing that I had a bit of an issue with the paper, with what we're... blog that we're talking about, and they refer to antisocial personality disorder, also known as psychopathology or sociopathology.
Sociopaths, right.
So sociopaths or psychopaths, I see those as three different things. Antisocial is different than psychopath is different than sociopath. Those are three different things.
I do too. Yeah.
And so he kind of clusters them all together here.
Everybody with antisocial personality disorder becomes a psychopath.
Right.
Or every psychopath is antisocial.
And that every psychopath is a sociopath.
Right.
Because by the definitions, they're different. But if you deconstruct the words, they're different. A psychopath, that psychopath is short for psychopathology. Which means there's some psychological disorder.
Right.
So there we're talking about somebody with a mental illness.
Right.
So a person with schizophrenia or somebody with bipolar disorder or somebody with some disorder that expresses itself in a very extreme way that makes that person violent or unpredictable or whatever, that person could then be called psychopathic.
Right. That's right.
Sociopathic.
They have a diagnosis.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Sociopathic, to me, would be the guy in Las Vegas. There was no mental illness.
No mental illness, exactly.
And so his disorder, if we wanted to do shutter quotes, his disorder was a social disorder.
Right.
And so that's sociopathology.
Right.
And what that means is that this is a person who sort of knows the social norms, social expectations, and uses that knowledge to violate the rights and privileges and properties and persons of other people.
The gangster of the 1930s who you know wasn't really mentally ill, but in that culture it was okay to kill and steal and be a loan shark and those sorts
Ted Bundy. He was very successful, law school. He was very socially connected, but he used those social skills that he had to do some pretty dangerous and deadly things.
Right.
So the difference between psychopath and sociopath, we catch psychopaths are typically caught pretty quickly.
Right.
Because their dangerousness is fueled out of mental illness, which makes it very difficult for them to, for lack of a better phrase, it makes it difficult for them to cover their tracks and to plan and to be more organized, all that kind of stuff.
That's right.
Sociopaths are able to plan and organize. Now, we got to get to that third one, which is the antisocial personality disorder. Let's be honest. Some people with antisocial personality disorder are extremely successful.
Right. That's right.
Sometimes they get political offices. Sometimes they're CEOs of companies. Sometimes they're attorneys. Sometimes they're psychologists. Sometimes they're physicians. Antisocial personality disorder consists of traits that a lot of people who are driven and determined and assertive and, you know, and feel, believe certain things about themselves, you have to have some of that to be successful in a capitalistic society.
The aggressive salesman.
Right.
The aggressive entrepreneur,
right?
You know, who do anything to succeed,
right?
And it borders on antisocial,
yeah,
personality disorder.
I mean, let's think about it this way, real quick. what do we hear about this time of year is, you know, all of the small mom and pop stores, mm-hmm. the community stores, all sort of band together and say, hey, let's shop small.
Shop small, right.
You know, and let's do this. Because these big companies have come in and, you know, the big box stores are in, right. And it takes... If we think about the diagnostic criteria for antisocial personality disorder...
Does Jeff Bezos...
Sam Walton...
Jeff Bezos?
The guy that owns Amazon?
Jeff Bezos.
Oh, mm-hmm. See, we were on the same page.
Right.
I don't know these people. I know you know them.
Yeah,
you had
we're close. Yeah, we're
turkey
friends.
With them the other
right.
day.
We did. We celebrated Thanksgiving together.
But, you know, then we would have to say... You know, because some of it is, you know, taking away things from other people.
That's
it's,
right.
you know, disregard for the feelings of other people. You know, all of those things kind of go into it. Not to mention the second one, which is narcissistic personality disorder.
Right.
You definitely have to have some of that.
Absolutely.
I mean,
if you run for political office in this country, you're almost by definition.
Hey, if you go to medical school,
right?
Because if you're going to go somewhere and then graduate with the idea that no, you come to me because I know how to fix you,
I can save your life.
The surgeons, right?
Right.
Psychiatrists, mm-hmm. psychologists, many
right.
times.
Right.
You're coming to me for me to fix you.
That's right.
That requires a great deal of narcissism.
Yeah. Where's that fine line between extreme
right.
confidence,
right.
and narcissism?
Right.
It's blurred.
Right. And certainly when we're talking about disorders, we're talking about some impairments
right.
that have to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But all of these people have traits of some of these things.
Right.
Now, so, I don't know. When I read that section of this blog, it just kind of,
Well,
second,
but,
a little bit.
But what he does, what this writer does is although I think it's a woman who wrote this article. Is it Athena? Is her name? Athena Salk?
I don't know.
And what this author does is she says both will hurt you.
Right.
But the narcissist and the will both hurt you. How she defines the difference is that the antisocial personality will commit unlawful acts where the narcissist won't.
Okay.
That's her definition.
Yeah.
Although we don't agree completely,
right.
I think the important point here is that if we're looking for an explanation of why people would pick up a deadly weapon
right.
and start shooting strangers
right.
or children,
right.
you know, instead of looking at mental illness in general,
mm-hmm.
let's look at these two types
right.
of pathology, psychopathology,
right.
which
right.
are the personality disorders. These are characterological flaws.
Right.
As you said, there's nothing illegal about what Jeff Bezos is doing.
Right.
He's not doing anything. He's allowed to do what he does in our country
mm-hmm.
in laws. So he's living within those laws or what Walmart has done,
mm-hmm.
where they have their pricing structure and their buying power and all that. It's not illegal to do that.
Right.
But you wonder about the characterological
mm-hmm.
flaws
mm-hmm.
of people who are so aggressive, who are more than assertive,
right.
or aggressive, would be so motivated that they actually destroy other businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Is that illegal? No, it's not illegal.
Right.
But you wonder about the ethics of it.
Right.
More broadly, not the ethics
right.
specifically, but the ethics more broadly about
yeah.
what it's doing. But these are business decisions. They're not always ethical decisions.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think it's... I think that this is this is related to the extreme masculinity because
right.
we tend to see these personalities
right.
in more likely to occur in men than in women.
Right.
And especially when it comes to the extreme
mm-hmm.
Version of them that leads to, you know, disorders.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, one last thing, though, I think that I wanted to make sure we mentioned with narcissistic personality disorder is that there are two types, and this isn't diagnostic, but there are sort of two types of narcissistic personality disorder. There's the one that we think of as the traditional classic narcissist, where they think that they're always right, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we see them as patients, Well, we usually don't see them as patients. We see somebody in their family
their spouse
as a patient.
Or
and,
parent.
But, the, but that person will come in, that patient, that family member will come in with narcissistic personality, and they will tell us what we're allowed to do.
Right.
Say, well, you just, you can go ahead and tell me what to do, because I know that I'm doing it the right way, so you just tell me.
Right.
It's like, well, all right.
You know? I just want you to affirm that I'm perfect.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. But the other type is sort of this insecure narcissist.
Right.
And so this is the narcissistic personality where the person is very egocentric, they're very self-centered, very focused on their own goals and needs,
right.
But they are, if all feels like shaky ground to them. And so they have to really assert themselves, and any hint of a scratch or dent on anything that they're trying to portray as mm-hmm. part of them,
right.
is going to be a problem. So what you might see with these people sometimes is, whereas that one type of person, narcissist, will, you know, comment on everybody's Facebook posts,
right.
you know, that, oh, mm-hmm. no, this is what you should do. You know, this is the right answer. The insecure narcissist probably won't comment on anybody.
And I think that's a critical distinction. The narcissist who's convinced that everything he does is right and doesn't matter what anybody else says, I know that I'm right.
Right.
10 people can tell me I'm wrong, but I know I'm right. The other one is more dangerous, I think, because that's a delicate and insecure
mm-hmm.
Form of narcissism
right.
that's easily offended,
mm-hmm.
needs constant reassurance, needs adulation.
Okay, right.
That needs everybody around that person has to be constantly commenting mm-hmm. and supporting and admiring. And as soon as you get the least hint of criticism,
mm-hmm.
Insecure mm-hmm. narcissist will lash out
right.
and come after you.
Right.
And that's the one that we worry about.
Right.
That's the That's the narcissism that we worry about.
Right.
Because they will seek revenge. They'll
right.
come after you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. So I definitely wanted to mention that because
right.
I've actually been wanting to do a podcast about that for a long time.
Well, you know, there used to be something called narcissistic abuse syndrome,
uh-huh.
you know, where,
yeah, they mentioned
and that
here.
Would be that second type mm-hmm. of narcissist. I guess that diagnosis doesn't exist in DSM-5
right.
mm-hmm. anymore. But there was a, to try to differentiate, I think now mm-hmm. we differentiate between antisocial personality and narcissistic
right.
personality.
Right.
But you're right. I think that's a better distinction.
Yeah.
Now, the final comment, there's a quote here by Dr. Niobe Way, and she says that our boys
mm-hmm.
really don't buy into the feminine culture because
right.
they're told to be something other than.
Right.
So we talked earlier about what is the real message in Be a Man.
Right.
Well, the other side, we understand that that's intended to
mm-hmm.
to create something positive, but it also denigrates
mm-hmm.
or marginalizes what is female.
Right.
Okay. And so, and as she says, it doesn't value what we feminized. If we're in a culture that doesn't value caring, doesn't value relationships, doesn't value empathy, you're going to have boys and girls and men
mm-hmm.
and women go crazy because
right.
they're going to act against what, you know, if I'm a man, then I have to be opposed to what
mm-hmm.
is woman.
Right.
Okay.
If
I'm a real man, then I'm opposed to, then I'm opposed to what is female.
Right.
And what is female? Caring,
yeah.
relationships,
right.
empathy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd really love to do a podcast with some, and have some women on to talk about some of these things,
right.
what it's like from their perspective.
Sure.
Because, you know,
yeah,
there's so many issues with it
mm-hmm.
that it's really difficult. And, it, you know, I would love to hear their perspective.
Right.
Because, you know, the whole idea of if a man is really successful in business, then he's
mm-hmm.
strong and he's,
right.
you know, he's confident and all this kind of stuff. But if a woman is successful in business, then, you know, it's skewed negatively. Oh, she must be, you know, this bad person and other
yeah.
words that
other
we can't
words
use
start
on this.
With B.
That's right.
No, but it's
podcast.
True. And women have said that. Women have complained
yeah.
about that for years, that a man is seen as successful and assertive and a woman is seen as somehow negative. It's a negative trait
yeah.
in a woman. It's a positive trait in a man. Same behavior,
right?
But it's viewed very differently
right.
culturally.
Right. And I like the idea that we really need to focus on developing a whole person. Mm-hmm. You know, we think, when we think about raising boys or raising girls, you know, I think that there are what we're referring to here as male traits, right. And those that are, quote, female traits. Mm-hmm. It's so important that we raise whole people, that we become whole people where we can be assertive and we can be, you know, aggressive mm-hmm. towards the things that we want to achieve and things that we want in our life. But we can also be sensitive and caring and emotive when it comes to things that we care about and that we right. love.
Yeah, and I think that's what the we might be getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, but I think the message is that we're teaching boys to be men, but we're also teaching them to despise what is feminine,
right.
to dislike, to mm-hmm. criticize what is feminine, you know, playing like a girl.
Right. Okay?
So we have to teach them both. And I was as you were talking, I was thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if you're watching a football game, American football?
Yeah.
Well, it could be either, because some soccer players tend to be aggressive.
Yeah.
Some sure. defense absolutely tend to be aggressive.
You're talking
we're
about
laughing.
That.
We're laughing because we were exercising this morning.
Yeah.
We want to be more aggressive. We were exercising this morning, and Bernie was... it's too late now. Bernie was telling me about one of his tactics. He was a defenseman.
Uh-huh.
What I was saying is if you watch a college football game, for mm-hmm. example, and a defensive player... tackles a guy, makes a wonderful play, knocks mm-hmm. him down. Do you ever see them help each other up?
Right, right.
Your opponent.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
No, you never do because you...
Right.
If you knock him unconscious...
Yeah.
Or you physically break something, then you're allowed to have some empathy.
Right.
But if you just make a good play and knock, and vanquish the person... Like a defensive lineman runs in and tackles the quarterback for mm-hmm. a 10-yard loss.
He dances.
He celebrates yeah. it. Why not go over and pick uh-huh. the guy up off yeah. the ground?
And that's what...
That would be the other side.
Right.
That would be teaching the other... But you're not allowed to do that.
Right.
Oh, that's... Yeah. What are you?
Yeah.
Being a girl, you know?
A sissy.
Are you being a sissy?
We teach our boys that on our U18 team. We teach them to, you know, if you foul somebody or something, you help them back up.
Right.
You
know, see, teaching mm-hmm. both. Then you're teaching yeah. them to be aggressive.
Yeah.
But you're also teaching empathy.
Yeah.
Okay. And I see no reason why we can't do that.
Right.
You see boxers do that.
Right.
You know, after the fight, they're hugging each other.
Right. You know what else is fascinating? I was thinking about this because of you brought up soccer and my some of my tactics.
And your tactics.
I'll
justify them later. That's what he's trying to...
No.
I'll justify them right now. He will rationalize his behavior in a moment.
No. You just have to let him know you're there. That's all I'm saying. So, but you know what?
It is your territory. I mean, and you have a right mm-hmm. to say, this is my... that's what the game is. This is my territory.
Right.
And I'm going to do everything I can to protect this territory.
Right.
Everything that's legal, everything I'm allowed to do...
That's right.
I will defend my territory.
That's right. I never got a red card, so...
A red card means...
That means you
is
have
that
to...
Is that bad?
That kicks you out of the game.
Oh.
And so I've never...
A bunch of yellow cards, so yellow cards are what? Warnings that you're that you're being a little aggressive.
Or that you just broke a rule of some sort intentionally that could hurt somebody. Oh, so... but you know, what I was thinking about is that... Because I have this... love for soccer. We have t-shirts and stuff like that that have little soccer sayings and everything. Mm-hmm. And my granddaughter, Zoe, she's 6 and she plays soccer and I love coaching her team and everything. Mm-hmm. But so we buy her t-shirts. So she has her soccer t-shirts and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But there are t-shirts out there that says, you know, it'll say like, you say I play like a girl, but on the back it will say, you know, while you're trying to catch me or something like that.
Right.
And you know, we have these shirts and these drives, these, mm-hmm. I don't know, advertising things that
right.
work to encourage girls to be more assertive and to be, mm-hmm. which I think is a beautiful thing because we don't want girls to think that they can't be those things. there is no complimentary to boys for that. There is no, yeah, be aggressive, but you know what? Say I play like a boy, but you know, let's sit down and talk afterwards. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like that for boys to encourage them to add in that other piece.
And I think one of the two or three primary messages in this article is that it's okay to do one, to, you know, be a man, okay? But let's do the other. Let's teach the other, okay? Because in not stressing the other, in not teaching the other, you're only teaching half the message.
Right.
And so, yes, okay, now they've become aggressive.
Yeah.
But that's not all we want. Right. We also want them to have empathy.
Right.
I want my sons to have empathy as well as aggression.
Yeah.
I want my daughters to do the same. I want my daughters to have empathy, but I also want them, if my daughters are athletes, I also want them to be aggressive.
Right, right. Yeah. I was just looking, we're getting short on time.
We can't. This is too important.
I know, because I really want to talk about what it even means when we say be a man. What are we even talking about? You know, what is a man? What is masculinity? But we may need to save that for another podcast.
Maybe we can do that for next week. Do you want to summarize it here, or do you want to do that?
Can you summarize it?
I think we can. If we go to a couple of quotes.
Okay.
One is by Joseph Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, I see why you...
No relationship. But he states that if you're taught to believe that everyone needs to respect you, mm-hmm. and this is the way you handle it as a man,
mm-hmm.
be a man, be tough, then respect is linked to violence.
Right.
And that's what we talk about. You're disrespecting me.
Right.
Okay. That's one quote. The second quote
Judy.
Is when men fear. Oh yeah, Judy Chu.
Yeah,
says boys within their peer group culture are posturing based on how other boys are posturing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what they're missing, and this is what we meant about we have to teach both. What they're missing is they want to be close to each other.
Right.
But rather than admitting that, they mirror each other.
Right.
You know, we're all tough guys. You know?
Right.
We're all big, tough men, and we're all aggressive. And I'm going to be aggressive because I see you being aggressive.
Okay? Yeah.
When what they really are seeking is closeness, bonding, some kind of attachment mm-hmm. to each other. And then Michael Kimmel,
mm-hmm.
and I think this, to me, summarizes it. We've constructed an idea of masculinity that doesn't give young boys a way to feel secure. And so we make them prove it all the time.
Right.
And what you said earlier is give boys both.
Right.
You know, say, you know, I'm playing like a boy and. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the important message, is that we have to teach them how to be comfortable in their masculinity so that they don't have to prove it all the time.
Right.
You know,
right.
You don't have to, you know, like you and I said earlier, if somebody comes up and says, you're disrespecting.
Right.
I've never said that to anybody.
Right.
Maybe I've said it to my children.
Right.
But we've never said it in the way that other people intended.
Right. Right. Yeah. I don't know that I've ever said it either. Even with my kids, I think I've said things like, it sounds like you're trying to disrespect me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But like it's not because it makes it so, I don't know. It just makes it. I just have a hard time with the idea of respect.
Right.
What we mean when we talk about respect. Because we talked about in a previous podcast, respect usually means obedience when we're talking about our kids.
What I say to my children is, you're being disrespectful and it hurts my feelings.
Right.
That's what your disrespect does.
Right.
In many parents, it angers them mm-hmm. because they're being disrespected. But I say to my children, no, I'm not angry, but you really hurt my feelings when you talk to me that way.
Right.
And that's okay to say that.
Well, and again, it goes back to that weak ego.
Right.
You know, if your ego is so weak that somebody can say, well, I think you're wrong, mm-hmm. and you say, well, man, why are you disrespecting me?
Right.
I'm not disrespecting you. I just disagree with what you're saying.
Right.
And I may have said it the wrong way. I may have said it in a confrontational way, but...
Right.
Good grief.
And my children don't want to hurt my feelings.
Right.
I mean, they might get angry, but they don't. So I have to tell them when they're doing things that hurt my feelings.
Right.
Okay. Because I know, I'm convinced that they don't want to hurt my feelings.
Right.
And there's no, I've never had an indication that any of my children have ever wanted to do that. And so I tell them that what you're doing is hurtful.
Yeah.
No, not, I guess I could, I know that some parents get angry when their kids.
Yeah.
Are disrespectful.
Yeah.
Then the final point is this. that there is some inverse relationship between encouraging mm-hmm. empathy. If you encourage empathy, it has an inhibitory effect on violence.
Right.
Okay. If you really care about somebody right. else, if we're teaching empathy, then it has an inverse effect. It has a negative effect on violence.
Right.
If you teach violence, you can't have empathy.
Right.
That's why in wars we come up with names mm-hmm. to name the enemy, because
right.
once you name them and you objectify them, then it's harder to be empathic.
Right.
Okay. So we do that in wars. We call Germans Nazis. You know, it's easier to kill right. a Nazi than a German.
Okay? Right.
And we have other words
yeah.
that we denigrate people. But if you're teaching, on the other hand, if you're teaching empathy, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. then it's harder to be violent.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I
you
think
don't kill that, somebody you care about. I mean,
right.
You care about.
Well, and I think about this is the nature of relationships in mm-hmm. general. You know, I hear people, and I know that you do as well, couples come in and they say the most horrible things to each other.
Right.
And you think, how could you, if you care about this person, how could right. you say that? Mm-hmm. People who are very empathic don't do that.
Don't do that.
You know, I right. when my wife and I are having an argument, mm-hmm. You know, yes, I admitted, thoughts will come to your mind and like right. say this, right. say this, and that's that maybe masculine, extreme that's, masculinity that kind of peaks in there, and but then there's that part of your brain that's like, that would be horrible to say. Why would I right. say that?
To somebody that's when you care
start,
about,
right? And that's when you say, okay, I got to walk away because right. I'm having, but a lot of people won't walk away.
No, and it's usually hurt feelings. You know, when just somebody's disrespecting me, you hurt my. It, they really are hurting our feelings, but we turn that quickly into anger,
right.
and anger leads to violence. Like I have to fight back for
right.
some reason,
yeah.
and you don't have to fight back. I know we're built that way. We talked about early in the podcast, we're built this way biologically,
mm-hmm.
but we don't have to be this way.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And one of the things that would help is if we teach both aggression and empathy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Right. So we got to do a better job of that, teaching right. empathy.
Especially to boys. They have yeah. increased testosterone, quickly turns into violence.
Especially mm-hmm. during the late childhood and early months. Teen right. Years. So, mm-hmm. all right. That's it. Is that all? We're making
but we'd
it.
Love to hear from... Listeners.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
And this another topic.
Our Patreon page is up and running. We don't have the banner art yet, so it's to come. But it's
today, the 23rd.
Yeah, we're recording on the 24th. This is going to go out on the 25th.
Okay,
it's okay. I know. 23rd was Thanksgiving. That was yesterday.
Oh, the reason I was been thinking about it is November 22nd was the day that Kennedy was assassinated. And so it always comes around.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Always comes around. Thanks. And I thought, I think the 22nd, which would have been...
2 days ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
yeah.
So today's we're recording on the
24th.
24th.
But our Patreon page is up and running. Check it out. If you have the interest, means interest, mm-hmm. You know, it gives the opportunity for you to support some of the work that we're doing here. We have a lot of things that we want to do in 2018, and we just need a little bit of support to be able to
right.
bring in some extra help, mm-hmm. A few extra hands to get in here and do some of the things so that we aren't here at, 6 o'clock in the morning on, No, it's later than that now, but
okay.
We were here early yesterday on Thanksgiving mm-hmm. morning.
Right.
So we don't have to do that so that we can get you all the information and things to help you live the best life you can live.
That's right. We want to keep improving,
yeah.
Providing more, providing better.
Yeah.
And so anything you can do
to yeah.
participate in that. The Patreon page will be up. Is
yeah,
up.
Is up. Yeah.
It will be improved.
Yeah, it'll shortly. Keep growing. And so there's just lots of things that we want to do. So right. stay tuned for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Before and until that time, you can certainly support us by
right.
Liking us, following us, sharing us on YouTube and mm-hmm. iTunes and Google Play Music and all the different places that you,
right.
you see. You know, writing a review on iTunes is incredibly right. helpful
right.
so that other people can find us and be part of the conversation.
Yep.
So, all right?
Yeah.
That is it for today. So until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.